Thank y'all for tuning in to this episode of You and Your Businesses podcast. I want to thank our guest, Reed Streva, who is the owner of Streva Fitness, correct?
Reed Streva Fitness.
Yes, Reed Streva Fitness, for joining us today. I wanted to have Reed here today because I think it would be a very interesting topic to have to talk to business owners and people in the working world about their health and fitness. Because in my observation, that piece of health and fitness, and that it affects the mind, it affects the body, and it affects how we work, right? And that is Reed's expertise. It is not my expertise, obviously, for the shape I'm in. So we're going to have him here today. So first, let's just start with kind of tell us a little bit about yourself, Reed.
Sure. So I'm from Acadiana, and I went to UL in Lafayette and was an exercise science major. And yeah, just kind of fell in love with the whole study of exercise. And so it's a fairly new field. Mm-hmm. And the more I kind of dove into it, the more I started really enjoying the like holistic health approach, looking at the whole body, looking at all the different systems, and also considering mental and spiritual as you know, an aspect of health that affects everything else.
It ties together mental, the spiritual, the physical. And when they get out of balance, right? If yeah. one of those pieces is out of balance, everything else gets out of balance.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned, you said a word, which I think is interesting because a lot of people have heard it. They don't really know what it means, and that's holistic.
Oh, yeah. So it comes from the Greek word holon, which means whole. Okay. And so whenever you take a holistic approach to health, you're simply looking at the whole body. So, for instance, Western medicine and physical therapy, they are typically more focused on, okay, there's an issue in this part. Okay, we're going to focus on fixing that issue. And they're very much so focused on that area. They know they're usually a specialist and they know exactly what to do with that specific situation. Whereas somebody who's a holistic health practitioner will typically start asking questions about their lifestyle. What's going on in your sleep life? What's going on in your activity level? What's your diet look like? All these different things that all kind of come together to, you know, make a person healthy or not. So they're typically more focused on your life in general, whereas Western medicine is more focused on the specific part. Like whatever it has issue, we're going to fix that issue.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. So my doctor, that's really what he does. But I changed to him, and what he started off with was, okay, the first thing we're going to do, Jay, is we're going to talk about diet, lifestyle, exercise. We're going to go through all of that. He said, my goal is so that you will eventually not be on any medicine. Because if we can address the physical side, the mental side, the health side, the dietary side,
wonderful.
That's going to relieve most of the issues we're having at the time. Like we talked about off screen, we discover wheat allergy, wheat flour allergy, I was gluten sensitive, and I went from 206 pounds to 180 pounds today. We're still 5 more pounds to go. He told me he wants me to lose more than that, but I don't think I'm going to. I like food too much.
Yeah, especially in this culture. You grew up in this culture in Acadiana. It's kind of hard to not like.
If you sat at my wife's table, you would understand because she's a fantastic
woman. Oh, that's wonderful.
Good. So you take a holistic look at that. And so in your world of health and fitness, right, what does that look like?
So I take a similar, similar to what I said about the example of, you know, asking them, okay, well, what's your activity look like? And they explain to me, it's like, okay, I might break it down a little bit if I need more information, depending on how chatty they are, right? And then, you know, next question, all right, well, what does your diet look like? What are you consuming? What does your sleep look like? What does your stress level look like? Do you like your job? What time in the morning do you have to wake up? Do you like that? Do you have to travel a lot? Are you sitting down a lot? And just kind of like, you know, I'll ask more broad questions like activity and stress level and things like that. And then I'll start breaking it down for, you know, things that we can relate to, like, you know, how often are you in traffic? How often are you sitting? Is posture something that you ever focused on? Like, did your parents kind of like instill in you to like always have good posture? Or do you just kind of do your own thing? Do you play video games? All these different things give me a general idea of how this person is going to move, what shape they're in, and what aches and pains they're most prone to having. Because a focus for all of my clients, for anyone who reaches out to me on social media or whatever, a main focus for me is making sure that they don't have any pain. If you don't have pain, then you can actually make steps towards fat loss and all the other things that we desire really from having activity and things like that. Like, we all want to be at a good, healthy weight. We all want to have good skin, all these things. It's necessary to get to the point where you don't have pain, and in order for you to be active enough to lose weight to, you know, focus on all the other aspects of health.
So do you find, so for instance, myself, I found that when I go probably 90% wheat flour free, focus on being somewhat gluten free, those, a lot of those little inflammations just evaporate. You know, like the arthritis in the hand or in the foot or knee pain or lower back pain. Is that pretty much the case, or is that?
So that's, you know, specifically with gluten, I would dare to say that no one should really be eating gluten. It's a protein that
everybody that is screaming right now
for sure,
because they want to give up cake, they want to give up cookies.
It's definitely only something I suggest to people who are really on the health grind. You know, they've been like really working at it for a long time. They have a lot of discipline. They're making a lot of steps. It's like, okay, I think you should actually take gluten and dairy out of your diet too.
Oh, dairy too. Okay.
Yes. So gluten is typically going to cause permeability in the gut lining.
Right.
So it, you know, your gut lining should be nice and firm, not too firm, but.
So what does permeability mean? Does that people
so
know what that
is? A permeability would be if it's more permeable, that means the gut lining is separating, therefore more toxins are able to get through, and
it doesn't do its job
of actually protecting things that aren't supposed to be there to get in there.
Okay.
So you have like waste and toxins kind of floating around your body, so your lymph system helps to get that out. Sometimes those things can, you know, get into your gut and cause a lot of like leaky gut syndrome, or it can cause issues. And then your gut's connected to your brain, and if you have inflammation anywhere in the body, it's most likely causing an effect on other parts of your body as well. That's why the holistic approach is, even Western medicine is kind of starting to adapt the holistic approach to some extent, because, you know, it's very necessary to look at the whole body. If one system is inflamed, or if something's inflamed, it's most likely going to cause issues in another area.
Okay, so what if I'm not willing to give it up completely? Can somebody go say 90% gluten-free and still have positive effects?
Hey, look, I will always make it clear to my clients, you make whatever decision you want. I'm here to educate you and tell you, basically, like, lay out your health plan and guide you through this process. If a client tells me straight up, Reed, I'm not willing to do that. I have one of the best clients ever. She's amazing. And, you know, I pretty much focus on diet and all aspects of lifestyle with everyone. I mean, as I talked about more stuff, she's just kind of like, yeah, Reed, I'm not going to change my diet. It's like, I like eating my ham sandwich for lunch. I don't eat anything for breakfast. I eat a ham sandwich for lunch, and then I eat whatever my husband cooked. It's like, awesome.
Yeah, you're
not
going to change that.
Like, okay, we won't focus on it anymore. You know, and every now and then I'll check in on her, like, you still feel that way? And she'll say yes. It's like, okay, cool. You know, like, you make whatever decision you want. I'm here to educate you and make sure that you have the opportunity to make the right decision.
That's a good approach. I think that's, it doesn't, sometimes you see people who have that thought process, which, you know, like I said, I'm not 100% gluten-free. It just doesn't work for my life, but I'll probably go 85%.
Yeah.
That is certainly better than what it was 5 years ago, right? Where I didn't feel well, you know, I was struggling with stamina, struggling with getting movement. I mean, it's certainly better than it was. My wife would probably want me to be 100% gluten-free.
Yeah, and, you know, definitely a point that I want to get across is you want to be focusing on making as much progress as possible, right? So if you say, like you, for instance, you've made a lot of progress and you've seen the difference in your life. That 5% of gluten, or that 10% or 15%, whatever, you know, I'm not going to be that concerned about it because of the progress that we've made and the fact that you're not experiencing the issues from gluten as much as you have in the past. Like, we're on a good pace. We're going in the right direction. Now, if you maybe say every Friday night, I'm going to eat a piece of bread. No one really says that, but every Friday night, I'm going to break my gluten-free situation. And then the next day you wake up with knee pain.
Yeah,
okay. I'm going to fuss at you, you know, like, I'm going to say, Well, Jay,
you did it to yourself.
You know what is causing this, and you still do it. Now, if somebody is not really experiencing anything because they've allowed 5% of gluten in their diet, they're allowing that little bit of gluten, and they're not, all of their issues have gone away. Like, hey, like I said before, my goal is to get you pain-free. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, yeah. I mean, if you've gotten to the point where you've gotten it mostly, it's where something isn't affecting you anymore, mm-hmm. then that's cool with me. Okay. That's a good goal.
So and one of the questions you asked was interesting to me that I want to circle back to. And you asked, do they like their job, right? Do they like what they do for work? How often do people say, no, I don't like it, or they're kind of indifferent? And that's good, I think, for our audience to know, because it kind of tells you how most people in the working world feel about their job, right?
So you're saying that...
So you asked me the job, yeah. So, you asked me, I'm one of your people you're training, and one of the questions you asked me is, so do you like what you do?
Oh, yeah, right.
And what percentage say, oh, yeah, I love it, or,
It's pretty half and half. So I've migrated more towards the people who have a successful living, and they pretty much always enjoy their job. I would say every single time they enjoy their job. They love what they're doing at that time.
That's good.
But I've also worked with younger people who are trying to get things going, and they just got out of college and kind of accepted whatever job they could get, or maybe they're 30 and they're happy because they just got a house and they're able to kind of like pay for a personal trainer and they're able to kind of start doing some of these things. And I talk to them and they're like, I'm definitely not with the job that I want to be doing, but it's giving me all of this, so I'm doing it. Okay. Yeah, so it's definitely a wide variety, but I would say it's pretty half and half. It's like, but I would say 100% of the people who are, I guess, successful, who own their own house, have a family, and they just overall have a good,
sense of life.
They 100% of the time, they love what they do. They had a mission from the start that was genuine. It wasn't just like, I'm going to be a doctor because that's what my mother did or whatever. They have an authentic and genuine approach to whatever they're doing, and they love it. And then they're successful because they loved it and because they were passionate about it. Definitely have plenty of people though who, just kind of do what they have to do. And with those people, I try to encourage them, like, have you ever considered looking at other jobs? It's clearly having a negative effect on your health. You're hiring me to help you with your health. Have you considered it?
How many of them actually do consider
it? Very few.
Sometimes people tend to get stuck.
I was there to say even none.
Yeah. Like some people, I tell my kids, I tell people I work with, if you can't figure out how to love what you do, then you need to go find something that you can love what you do.
Right.
Because all you're doing is making everybody else around you miserable. It destroys your health. It destroys your spiritual life. It destroys your family life. Everybody else is. So if you can't figure out how to love what you do, then you need to find something else that you can love to do.
No doubt. Yeah. All the systems play together. There's wellness. There's 8 dimensions of wellness. Some would argue 6, some would argue 7, 9, whatever. But occupational health is one of them. Financial health, those are 2 separate things. And mental, physical, spiritual, and then there's as specific as relational and environmental, like what is your home environment like? All these different things play together. And occupational health is definitely, one of the biggest causes of stress,
Well, we spend 8 hours a day there.
Yeah.
And we spend the majority of our waking hours there.
Yeah. And if you don't enjoy your job, you're missing out on a lot of life.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in jobs that I was miserable, and it took me a little while to change. And then when I changed, it was better.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why I'm self-employed. So I control it in my destiny. I love what I do. I love helping people. I love having an impact in the community. I love having an impact on the businesses that I help. I love to see the downstream of that. And I can be who I am. Right, and not have to worry about somebody coming in and saying, no, that's nice that you're that person that wants to help people, but that's not who we are.
Yeah.
So I think it's important that people do what they love.
Yeah. Now, were you attracted to the security at the beginning, like before you were self-employed, were you attracted to the security of having an employer?
Yeah, I think it was easy. And it was easy. I mean, running your own business is tough. We're going to talk about you running your own business, but running your own business can be hard. It's a lot of aspects that people don't realize that people, because most people who do business like you did, is you go into a business because I love this, I'm passionate about it, and then they don't always think about the business, running the business aspect yeah. of it. And so there's a struggle with that. I like that part. I also like what I do. But I think there is a comfort and security that people find when they go work for somebody else. And now what I've seen shift in younger groups, the guys and ladies that are your age, that are in their 20s, I think they've noticed that when they're working in the corporate world, their parents didn't have the security that they expected because of layoffs or staff reductions or mergers and acquisitions. And so more, I'm finding a higher percentage of younger people, early 30s, 20s, are saying, the heck with that, I'm going to go start my own business.
Yeah, for sure.
Have you seen that amongst your friends?
Oh, no doubt. And, you know, I think it's almost, it's a trend that, you know, it's like, why not work for yourself, make your own hours? I think media kind of highlights all the benefits of entrepreneurship. And there's a lot of people who are very influential, like Gary Vaynerchuk. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, and multiple people on the internet who are, you know, maybe too far towards the side, but are very much so like, everyone, to be entrepreneurs, you should be starting your own business, you should be doing this. And, you know, not everyone is necessarily for entrepreneurship, but yeah, they put that out there. And so a lot of people were like, yeah, why not, you know, work for myself and control.
I think there's probably about 30% of the folks out there who have not necessarily the financial wherewithal, but the emotional, physical, mental wherewithal to start a business, run a business, and succeed.
Right.
It's not for everybody.
There's no doubt.
Because it's just not. And some people don't have that risk personality. But I am seeing more young people willing to do it, like you. So, mm-hmm. So what made you start your business?
I don't love the idea of working for someone else. I've kind of struggled with it, you know.
Okay.
But originally that wasn't necessarily my intention at the beginning. Whenever I first started personal training, I decided to get the first decision was to get certified. Mm-hmm. I reached out to professors and different people. How do I get certified? How do I start that process? And I made that decision because I worked for a beer distributorship, my grandpa's beer distributorship called Striva Distributing. And I did that every summer for about 6 or 7 years since I was 15. And I hated it. I hated every second of it.
Sorry, Grandpa.
Yeah, sorry, Grandpa. I didn't enjoy doing the labor for you. But I loved the business. You know, I enjoyed the family history of it. And I enjoyed a lot of aspects of the business. And ultimately, they had a good business culture. My dad and my grandfather were, you know, good bosses. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to do labor. You know, and it was just very clear to me that this wasn't something I'm interested in. So I got out of that, started personal training, and I had my first boss. He was more of a mentor. I was pretty, you know, naive. I didn't really know how things work. So he guided me through a lot of it. And I was really excited about it. Then I got another boss. Every time I got another boss, I was just like, I don't like what you're telling me right now. And a lot of it was really good information that I still use to today. But there is this immediate reaction of like, I want to do it my own way. And so now that I've gotten to the point where I have the knowledge to be able to kind of take care of things on my own, and I've consumed a lot of business information, it's just been a lot easier for me to just make the decision. Like, I want to do it my way. I want to do it the way that I've made it.
And I'm sure you're still learning.
Oh, for sure. All the time. Yeah. All the time. I need guidance. I need mentorship. I think the part of having a boss is that they have this specific system set in place. And especially in the fitness industry, even though I'm like under them, I'm still my own business because I have to go out and make sales for myself all the time. And then they take 50% of every sale that I make. And so it was just this weird thing that was like blowing my mind. I was like, this makes no sense that I'm going to go out doing all this work. They're not handing me anything. They're not handing, like, I'm going out and doing all this work just to have people in their building, and then they're going to take 50% of it. It's like, this makes no
sense for me.
It was mostly the fitness route. Okay. Not necessarily every, you know, maybe if I was called to an engineering field, I would definitely want to work under someone or whatever. The fitness route, it seemed like a no-brainer to be an entrepreneur. And of course, like I had talked about earlier with my passion of health, I just kind of developed a passion and, you know, saw that, you know, went down the personal training route and saw that, you know, it's best for me to just go on my own and not have a boss.
Good to hear. Yeah. So there's a couple of things. And one of the things interesting I hear is, and this is really kind of for us as we are all business owners, and you may come to a point in your business where you have other trainers that are working for you or things like that. Or I know you have a dream of having a world-class gym, right? So if you have a world-class gym, you're going to have people working for you. There's a word that you use, which I think all of us who are owners of businesses need to recognize the difference in. And what you call the folks who you call the folks that you work for your boss, right? Yeah. And which means that they were, and this isn't any, one of them you said mentored you, the first one, and the other one's kind of were in the boss mode. As leaders, we need to be seen more as the leader than the boss. Mm-hmm. When you're the boss, you're too busy telling people what to do without recognizing their reaction to what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it rubbed you wrong.
Yeah. And you know, there were some that were, you know, I would say I've had three, I guess you could say like leaders, people who were in charge of me. And the two of them were great mentors. They worked for the university and they were just good mentors. They were just, you know, honestly, they cared about me. They were very focused. And then I went to the corporate world and that's where it became very clear that like, this is strictly about business. You're here because we think you're going to bring us money. And there wasn't much of a genuine side to it.
So they lost the sight of the human dignity.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's important.
Yeah, definitely.
And you see that, you know, anybody who hears me or has ever listened know that I'm a huge local small business advocate, not the biggest advocate of the big corporate world, mostly because of what you just stated. Not always. There are some corporations that do a good job of that, but most of the time we end up gearing towards the stock strike price and profit, and we forget that it's human. The employees of workforce have human dignity. And we're supposed to be building toward the common good, and we're supposed to make money too. That builds toward the common good, but forgetting the human dignity of somebody, you're a human person.
Yeah.
That just strikes against most people who own their own businesses grain, I think. And that's why a lot of them do go out to start businesses.
Yeah.
So what's been the biggest struggle for you in running a business?
Pricing.
Okay.
Yeah, no doubt. Pricing things that meet that perfect middle of, you know, not being too expensive to where you're turning people away, but it's also it's as high as you can go without turning people away mm-hmm. because it's too expensive. And also kind of just keeping in mind that like don't undersell myself. And, you know, I think sales was somewhat natural because I'm a very outgoing person. And once I came across in a book that, you know, a salesperson knows that their product has value and they want to bring that value to people. And that's all I wanted to do. So it took my mindset from being a salesperson to like, okay, I need to present this in order for them to have what I'm offering. Right. You know, it has value and I want to bring that value to people.
It's value worth paying for.
Yes. Yes. And it's necessary. And then I receive the money, which is that equal, the mutual relationship. Yeah.
Right. So a lot of people, especially young business owners, maybe it's a lack of confidence or a lack of understanding or not really understanding their own real value, have a tendency to come in the pricing realm and underprice themselves. And what I've seen when people do that is they're signaling that there isn't as much value.
Right.
So it's always better to come up. And it is finding that happy middle ground, right? Where you should be, that it fits what you want to do and allows you to make a living.
Yeah. I mean,
ultimately, you have to make a living.
Yeah. I
mean, you got to pay the rent, you got to pay the house notes, you got to pay for the cars, you got to, you know, car breaks down, you gotta be able to pay for that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
if you can't do that, then why are we doing this?
Yeah, right? And whenever this business first started, it was in the middle of quarantine. It was like July during the pandemic.
Oh, wow.
And I, you know, I had gotten out of school, pretty much all the plans that I had to move away and do further education or to start my business elsewhere or whatever, it all kind of like, you know.
If you were to go to the West Coast.
I was going to go to the West Coast. That's where a lot more, like, it's very saturated in personal training, but also I would have a lot of really good mentors. And really, I just wanted to learn out there and then bring it back to Lafayette, Louisiana. You know, that was kind of the idea. But because the pandemic happened at that time, I just started doing it at home. It's like, let me start driving to people's houses. If they're comfortable with it, they're not, I'll start doing it online. And so I just did it out of my house, and I was just excited to have people. I was like excited that it was working, you know, that people wanted to work with me and that I just hit a market that actually made sense, and people didn't want to go to gyms anymore, but they were perfectly fine with having a personal trainer come to their house. They loved it.
So you go to somebody's house, what does that time look like? What do you do?
Usually start with a warm up. So just kind of, I'm pretty big on a warm up because honestly, like, your warm up should make you the most, give you the most effective movement patterns possible. And then the workout, which is like the middle portion, is strictly focused on either lifting as much weight as possible, getting stronger, or feeling a burn in the muscle, or hypertrophy, which means gaining muscle size. So there's a difference between strength and muscle size. Then there's muscular endurance, and then there's cardiovascular endurance. Okay, so that's where I focus on that. And then the end is cooling them down, teaching them how to meditate, teaching them how to cool down, do certain stretches. Like if somebody's, you know, really tight in a certain area, I'll focus on stretching that. If they're relatively, you know, flexible and they're able to move pretty well, then I'll teach them meditation and things like that to cool it down.
Poor old guy, you'd be stressing me all over the place.
I'd be stressing you a lot for sure, yeah. And now that I'm in massage therapy school, I'll massage you and then I'd stretch you.
Because I'm not nearly as flexible as I probably should be.
No,
I'd be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, well, that's how it is, especially all those years of driving around all the time. Yeah. And then,
I mean, 3.5 hours of drive. And
yeah.
That's caused some back issues over the years. And I know for myself, if I don't work out, my back will be a problem.
Yeah.
I have to.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
which is mind blowing because a lot of people are afraid to do certain things because they have knee pain or back pain. And it's like, no, actually, you know, learning how to do this is going to scare people, but learning how to deadlift is the best thing you can do for your back.
I do deadlifts when I hang up.
Oh yeah, they're tough. They're not super fun. But if you do deadlifts correctly, that will be the best thing you can do for your lower back. And obviously, people with lower back pain who don't know how to deadlift are afraid of deadlift. And I don't blame them because it is intimidating. And also, what we've been taught for all these years, like deadlifts ruin that guy's back. Make sure you don't ever
probably
deadlift.
Get it wrong.
Right. Well, any pain that you have comes from dysfunction. There's no doubt. That's a fact. And so if you get pain from deadlift, somebody gets injured from deadlift, there was dysfunction. Even if they looked like they had relatively good form, there was dysfunction somewhere. Okay, so then I can take that. This guy had lower back pain. He becomes my client. I focus on where that dysfunction came from, and I teach them how to deadlift correctly if they're able to do it, and, you know, build them up to the point where they can do full-on deadlifts without any guidance. I can just say, deadlift, I'll go sit in the corner and take some notes. You know, I don't have to sit there and critique every little thing that we're doing. Just take care of it. I'll take notes.
So do you bring equipment with you or?
Yeah, sometimes. So some people have gyms at their house.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's nice.
Some people, yeah, it is nice. I wasn't expecting that when I started it, you know.
Okay.
But I remember one lady, she, you know, I went to her for the first time and we were doing exercises in their living room. And she didn't even tell me that she had basically like a full-on CrossFit gym in her backyard, in a shed in her backyard.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, it's a large shed with like really good workout equipment. And I was just mind blown that she didn't even think about it, you know, but ultimately, yeah, I mean, there are people who have their own at-home setups. At some point in their life, they were like, I'm going to work out, I'm going to take care of this. And they were willing to invest money in making a little at-home situation.
They set it up, they never really did anything with it.
Sometimes, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Or sometimes it was their husbands that were doing it and the wife was doing it and they weren't, okay. The kids were doing it and they weren't, whatever. But yeah, it's been really cool to work out and to work with people in their gyms. And then sometimes I'm just in somebody's living room. I mean, there's people who I had to get over this awkwardness. And if I don't click with a client, it's kind of hard in this situation because I'm in their living room and their family's kind of just walking around doing their thing. And I'm like training them like, all right, give me three more, give me 20 more seconds. Whatever, and it's just like, it's an awkward experience, But if I click with the person, usually it's you know, very genuine. And a lot of times, you know, the family really appreciates what I'm doing, because a lot of times it's a person who really needs it, you know. And so most of my clients are older people with, you know, maybe they struggle with certain movements and things like that. And so I come in and I don't really need equipment. I can just teach them how to move correctly. Teach them how to squat, teach them how to hinge their hips, which is deadlift. I can teach them how to rotate their spine, which is like Russian twists. You know, they're going back and forth, or
another
setting a, yeah, Russian twists are another great one. So yeah, you know, there's different body movements that we need to be good at in order to move correctly.
So somebody who's listening that's sitting there saying, man, I don't really need to do something, right? Where do they start?
Where do you start? It's a great question. If you're willing to get a personal trainer, get a personal trainer. Most, you know.
What if they don't have it in their budget?
Okay, if they don't have it in their budget, then the first thing to do, reach out to me and I'll send you some YouTube videos.
Okay,
yeah,
that's good.
Yeah.
All right, where would they find you?
So they can reach out to me on social media, Facebook or Instagram.
All right.
Facebook is going to be Reach Dreva Fitness. Or just Reach Dreva.
And I've seen you on Facebook and those places, and your social media is
well.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Reach Dreva, yeah. So reach out to me on there. I'm pretty active. If not, you can go reachdreva@gmail.com. That's my email. So it's just my name at gmail.com. So hopefully you spell my name correctly. And all you do is just put that before @gmail.com. And you can reach out to me. And I just want to help people. I want people to be healthier. You know, I don't... I'm not as focused on making this gigantic moneymaker for me as I am focused on increasing the health of my community, the people around me. I want them to be healthier.
So are you seeing, here's another question, because are you starting to see businesses, you know, medium-sized businesses that are more focusing on the holistic approach to health for their employees, encouraging that?
Yeah, because it brings down insurance. Right. Yeah. So I thought about getting into the corporate world in that way by going to a really big business and basically leading a gym in that place and personal training there.
My son Daniel works for LWCC in Baton Rouge, and they just changed. I don't know if they changed, but their first floor of their building in downtown Baton Rouge is a gym. Mm,
yeah.
And for every employee, they provide. Like a trainer, where they can go in and give them exercises, they do body checks, they check the diet, they do wellness.
That's awesome.
And
it's so smart.
I'm not going to say the price is a month because it might be private, but you would be amazed at what.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
No, yeah. And I mean,
I said, oh my gosh, you need to work at that place.
Yeah, you're going to have the most effective employees, right? And that's kind of like, you know, what we were talking about earlier. If you take away the human dignity, if you focus on their human dignity, then you're going to care about your employees' health. And like, I think it's Stephen Covey that, you know, talks about it in Seven Habits of Highly Effective People.
Yep.
With, you know, the goose and the golden egg.
Mm-hmm.
You know, making sure you feed the goose because you love the golden egg, and people start focusing on that golden egg so much. But it's like you end up ignoring the thing that's making the golden egg.
Right.
And then so your employees are that goose. You need to feed that goose and make sure that goose is perfect. And then they'll produce that golden egg. They'll produce that. So
that's going to be the title of this show.
Wonderful.
Feed the goose.
Feed the goose. You have to. The goose can also be your body. Make sure your body is well fed with good things.
That's awesome. So yeah, and Daniel talks about how great the culture is there. And it's because, and what I find, just a conversation with him, I haven't had any experience at that company. But I thought it was, when he first mentioned it to me, my first thought was, okay, that company is going to have a good culture.
Mm.
Because they're focusing on the whole person as an employee, not as just the golden egg.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So,
and you know, a lot of like homegrown gyms seem to have really good cultures because they're a facility that's literally focused on health. You know, and when you have this culture of focusing on bettering yourself, I mean, it's only going to produce good things. It's only going to produce fruit. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so personal stuff. Let's just kind of tell
sure.
Everybody a little bit about yourself personally. We heard that your grandfather and your father have a beer distributorship.
My father ran it. My grandpa owned it with his siblings.
Okay.
It was started by my great-grandfather, who started in Morgan City. It was the first
okay.
beer distributorship when Prohibition had ended.
Oh, wow.
And so it was the first beer distributorship in Louisiana.
That was smart for him. Yeah. Jump right in.
Yeah. I mean, he went straight into it. And, you know, he had Pearl and Jax. I don't know if you know those.
Pearl, too. It's been a long time. It just shows my age.
Yeah. And then my grandpa ended up, I mean, honestly, just kind of fell into a gold mine because my great-grandfather died when he was, you know, pretty early on, and so my grandpa and his siblings inherited this business right before Miller High Life took off. Mm-hmm. And then Miller Lite took off even more, and then Coors Light came into the equation, and then they got things like Heineken and Blue Moon, and you know, and I don't necessarily have the order perfectly, but that's basically sure. What happens. And I was way out of the picture at that point, right? but that's basically what happened. So it did really well as a family distributorship, and then 2 years ago, right before COVID hit, they sold it to a bigger distributor company. So
your dad's retired, or?
Yeah, I mean, so he's working for the state now. He actually does this really cool program where he helps kids who have, not necessarily kids, 18 to 24-year-olds who, you know, maybe have a bad record, mm-hmm. things like that. And he brings them to a business, and the state pays the employee, and then the business gets free labor. So it helps the kid build up work experience and put something on his resume and maybe even get hired by the business. And so like they have a time limit on it. And, you know, after the time limit is done, the business can choose to hire that person, you know.
That's awesome.
And so it's a pretty cool system and not many people know about it.
That's siblings?
That's through the state. I have two siblings. One's in Philadelphia. One's in Mississippi.
Okay.
Mississippi guy, labor. He does good with labor and, you know, he takes care of business. You know, I remember we got our aptitudes tested and he had a 100, he was in the 99th percentile of grip strength. It was like, okay, you need,
wow.
It's like, do labor. Yeah.
99% of grip strength is pretty strong.
That's pretty awesome. Right? I remember just being mind blown by that. But so he does labor. And then my sister, she's in speech pathology school and in Philadelphia and she likes to write. My mother's a really creative writer. As well. So they kind of have that artistic talent. I like to write, but the teachers always hated me. Because I would never listen to the instructions. I would just write. I would just throw up on a page, basically.
There's a thread there of not wanting to listen.
Yeah.
there is a thread
maybe a
there.
Little bit. Yeah. I wasn't the best student, you know.
Okay.
I'm a motivated and I'm passionate, you know, but being a student hasn't been one of my best attributes.
It's not good. It doesn't have to be your best attributes.
Right.
One of my things I tell people is if you have the ability to communicate and the willingness to work, pretty much everything else can work out.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can't communicate and you don't have the willingness to work, it's going to be very hard to make it work out.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, listening is a skill of mine, even though in some situations like at school or with bosses, you know, it was more like this rebellion took over where it was like, I don't want to have to be forced to listen to you, but if I hear someone and they're speaking truth, I want to listen,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm going to sit there and listen. And I've had a lot of mentors. I've been blessed with a lot of mentors.
Good.
I worked for the university, the rec center of the university. This is where I got certified, learned how to teach group classes, learned how to personal train.
And ULL, just for everybody to know.
Yeah. UL and Lafayette. And, you know, and basically the system at rec centers and colleges is like, it's a mentorship program. They have graduate assistants who are pretty much there to just develop these students and teach them how to be as best employees as possible.
That's pretty cool.
And so it is cool. And like the punishments and stuff like that, like they're not very bad. Like the whole culture is just focused on developing these people, saying, look, you did this wrong. You shouldn't have done that. And this is how typically people would react. It's like, this is going to be your punishment. Obviously, if somebody was a really bad employee, they take them out because we do have to take care of things. But,
sure.
But it's a mentorship program, and I was blessed to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. And got multiple mentors and just learned about life, learned about how to be the best employee I could be and also be the most effective person I could be, and started getting book recommendations. And
good.
And book recommendations were huge. Yeah. I love reading.
Yeah, I love reading too.
I'm reading The Power of Storytelling.
I was going to say, what's the book you're reading now?
Yeah, which I'm pumped about. The Power of Storytelling by Ty Bennett.
Okay.
Have you heard of it?
No, I haven't. I just finished reading not long ago a book called Building Your Story Brand. So I'm sure it's very similar in thought process. I'm going to have to look that up.
I'm about a page and a half in, so don't ask me any questions about it. But really, I mean, the storytelling. I want to be a public speaker. That is a focus. I have my own podcast, and I want to be a public speaker and do ministry and also talk about health and things like that. And so I want to set up a good foundation while I'm being a personal trainer and being strictly like a fitness person or fitness and health person. I want to set a foundation during this time period of being a really good public speaker and communicating well to audiences and things like that. So
far today, you seem like you're doing all right.
Oh, thank you.
All right. So that was the book. That was one more questions. What's your favorite alcoholic beverage?
Favorite alcoholic beverage. I'm mostly in the mood for beer.
Okay. What kind of?
You know, as a personal trainer, I don't necessarily advise, but.
I mean, you're human.
Yeah, right? I'm human, right?
You're human.
No, and like I said, I mean, I tell my people what, you know, the health facts. I'll tell people that alcohol is bad. They tell me that they drink alcohol today. I'm like, all right, sure.
Whatever. So what beer is your favorite?
Yeah, I do love staying local with it. So I do like Parish Brewing and Canebrake. Okay. Specifically is an amazing beer. Always.
Alex and Hunter had a Canebrake on the
Yeah, I'd podcast. Actually listen to their podcast. I like Dos Equis a lot. Dos Equis is probably my go-to with the lime.
Yeah, I like it.
It's very good. I've been drinking more vodka lately because I have had like kind of I was drinking beer quite a lot and I was just getting very bloated and
if
you drink beer all the time.
That's why we get the beer belly.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
What brand of vodka?
So there's actually a 7-3 distillery in New Orleans.
Okay.
And I went there this past weekend and we were doing taste testing of all their liquors and just getting an explanation of all these things. And it was a cool experience, and I really liked the vodka, so I tried it. And that's the one that I'm on right now.
Okay, that's cool.
7-3 Distillery, check it out.
Yeah. Favorite dessert?
Favorite dessert? Desserts. Probably the most consistent is probably just like homemade cookies, specifically peanut butter, oat, and chocolate.
Okay.
That mix, like I love the texture that oats bring, and then
the oatmeal cookie.
Peanut butter and chocolate is just perfect. And so if you make cookies with all three, oh my goodness.
I've never had one with all three, but I'll have to look for a recipe for that.
My girlfriend's mother always bakes it for me every time I come over. Even though I'm like really focused on health, if she makes it, I'm not going to say no.
Of course not. No. Okay.
And it's amazing.
All right. So let's just put all this in a wrapper for people.
Sure.
And as you think through the health and fitness and the business environment, and you have an audience here, give them what you think are the three most important places to be when it comes to health and fitness and how it affects their business. Give them the three most important things.
I don't know how related this is to fitness necessarily, but the first thing that comes to mind is wake up to your first alarm. So,
okay. Seth, I'm bad with that.
Oh, me too. But it's a mindset, and it's fresh on my mind because I've gone through a period of time where I allowed myself to pretty much set like 6 alarms and just wake up on the last one. And really, you're telling yourself, I'm not ready for the day. Every time you snooze an alarm, every time you decide, the alarm goes off and you say, I'm not ready for the day. Or you're
first
not
alarm.
Trusting yourself. So, I strongly suggest people, like, you know, have a good morning routine. You know, wake up to that first alarm, drink a coffee, say your prayers, eat breakfast, whatever. And then the next thing I would say is, I would say feed yourself really. Okay, I'll go ahead and say this. This is kind of like, you know, some other health professionals might argue with me, and I'm okay with that. I'll debate. But I would say avoid carbs until the evening. Until you're done with work at the end of the day.
Okay.
Stick to your really healthy fats and protein, you know, just meat and vegetables. And I love avocados. My morning, you know, it's eggs and avocado.
Egg and avocado is good.
Later on in the day.
Gluten-free toast. That's really
good. Yeah, and I would use gluten-free toast. So, like, for the most part, I would say, like, try to stay away from, like, heavy carbs in the morning. A lot of people consume cereal, Pop-Tarts. It became, like, you know, make sure you get your carbs at the beginning of the day because it'll give you energy. No, it gives you mental fatigue.
Right.
It brings you this mental clarity goes away. And that's completely necessary to be effective throughout your day, right? You need that mental clarity. So take out the creamer out of your coffee. Take out the sugar out of your coffee.
Oh, you're killing me.
Stop eating Pop-Tarts. Stop eating cereal.
I'm Pop-Tart problem.
Yeah, it's good. Pop-Tarts are amazing. I actually love Pop-Tarts, but I don't eat
that.
Yeah. Every now and then, maybe.
Sorry,
I'm
Kellogg.
Really excited. Sorry. Actually, Kellogg, the guy who invented Kellogg, he was a massage therapist. And anyway, I'm learning about him at school right
now. Pretty
massage
cool.
therapy school. So
okay.
He was actually, he had a pretty big impact on the massage therapy industry. And he's also very weird.
Awesome.
Pretty cultish. Anyway. And then the third thing that I would say, check your sleep. Track it. Track your sleep. So, you know, if you're not getting enough sleep, you're not going to have the mental energy to, you know, go through your day. Like, make sure your energy is right. And most of the time, if it's not, it has to do with your sleep.
Okay.
And then you can break it down from there. It doesn't have to do with diet, whatever. Yeah, that was kind of a messy three. But the first one is the first alarm.
Right.
It sets a good mindset. Second one, avoid carbs in the middle of the day. I mean, at the beginning of the day, like, don't go heavy on carbs. Like, keep it somewhat protein and fats. Don't be afraid to fast every now and then if you want in the mornings. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with it. Okay. You're going to survive. Your body knows what to do.
Right.
And then lastly, make sure you're getting good sleep.
Awesome. I think that's a good way to wrap it up. Cause it gives people three things they can really do.
Yeah.
Right. And it's a good starting point.
Yeah.
So I appreciate it. I want to thank you for coming in.
Hey,
I really
thank you so
it.
Much, Jay.
I want to thank y'all for attending, and I hope that you enjoyed Reed, and he gave you how to reach out to him. So I know he's serious about it, and he's serious about helping people with their health. And I hope that you recognize that we also believe that part of being able to be a good business owner and be good in the workplace is to maintain your health. Right? And so with that, I'll say thank y'all, and hope to see you next time.